taken out of your checking account, and you can donate that money to KBOO. And people are waiting to answer the phone and set that up with you. And that number to call is 877-500-5266.
That's right. Take the next step and become a member of KBOO Community Radio. We all share a passion for truth and beauty and justice. And this is just the next step. Become more than just a passive listener and consumer of this information. Be part of this movement of community radio, participatory media, and the creation of a real public dialogue and space where in the world it's so incredibly difficult to get an, I wouldn't even say unbiased, like informational source. I would say something that speaks to truth rather than it being a massive marketing effort or something that is biased in a way that helps to control people. We don't do that in community radio. And to join us, call 877-500-5266.
What you're going to hear when you listen to a lot of the radio that's on the rest of the dial and on the right side of the dial is you're going to hear people saying that they're unbiased when in actuality it's very biased and things are actually not balanced right now. So we're doing a lot of work here at KBOO to bring you a balanced perspective. 877-500-5266.
Hey, you ride with me. It's free.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, The Digital Divide.
KBOO would like to thank the restaurants that donated food for our volunteers today. Overlook Family Restaurants for providing breakfast, located at 1332 North Skidmore, serving Greek and American cuisine featuring a lounge with a fireplace. Kell's Irish Pub for providing lunch, located at 112 Southwest 2nd. Kell's is family owned and operated and has been serving the Northwest since 1930. Kell's' newest location on Northwest 21st features 5 microbrews and is near the Timbers and Thorns matches. Marrakesh Moroccan Restaurant for providing dinner, located at 1201 Northwest 21st Avenue, featuring fixed price meals as well as an a la carte menu served on pillowed low banquettes plus regular belly dancing.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Black History Heroes and Legends, a 3-day event from September 11th through 13th. The keynote speaker for this 20th anniversary celebration will be Mr. Les Pee Wee Harrison. And other speakers include Imani Muhammad, Mike Crenshaw, Jamo Greenidge, and more. That's Oregon Black History Heroes and Legends, September 11th through 13th at venues across Portland. Location, speakers, and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you are tuned in to KBOO Portland. Hi, I'm Rabia Yeaman, your host for The Digital Divide. And today we're going to be listening in on a conversation I had last week with Bruce Schneier. Corporations use surveillance to manipulate not only the news, but advertisements we see, the prices that we're offered, interest rates, and governments use surveillance to discriminate, censor, chill free speech, and put people in danger worldwide. Today we're going to hear an interview with Bruce. He is an expert in online surveillance, and we'll be breaking to talk about the value of being a member at KBOO. While you're listening, just go ahead and dial now, 877-500-5266, and do your part to preserve individual freedom and autonomy. And now, The Digital Divide.
Thank you.
I'm Rabia Yeaman with The Digital Divide. I am joined today with Bruce Schneier, an internationally renowned security technologist, often called a security guru by The Economist. He's the author of 13 books, including his most recent, Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World. His influential newsletter, Cryptogram, and his blog, Schneier on Security, are read by over 250,000 people. He's testified before Congress. Bruce is also a program fellow at the New America Foundation's Open Technology Institute and a board member of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Bruce, welcome to The Digital Divide.
No, thank you for having me.
Bruce, you recently wrote on your own site, and I'm going to quote you, "When I think about the security implications of the Internet of Things, this is one of my primary worries. As we connect things to each other, vulnerabilities on one of them affect the security of another. And because so many of the things we connect to the Internet will be poorly designed and low cost, there will be lots of vulnerabilities in them." I think about that too, but I lack the actual expertise in the area of Internet security. So we have cars, refrigerators, keychains, everything that's connected in various ways to the Internet, business networks, Bluetooth, satellites. And some of that technology, maybe a lot of that technology, is going to be vulnerable or hackable. What do we do? Is that a danger? What risk does that pose?
It is a huge danger, and we probably can't do much of anything right now, unfortunately. I mean, the way to think about it is that these are all computers. Things are turning into computers. Your refrigerator is a computer that keeps things cold. Your car is a computer with four wheels and an engine. Your smartphone is a computer that makes phone calls. And as things turn into computers, they get the same characteristics of our computers, which means they're vulnerable to hacking, to viruses, to all the things that we've had to deal with our computers the past couple of decades. Now, there are some differences. The first is that a lot of these devices are very low cost. So your computer is a $1,000 item. There's a company behind it that downloads patches every month. And that allows us to keep that thing secure even as we find vulnerabilities. When the computer is in your thermostat or even your car or your home router, or any of the other things, your light bulbs, which will have computers in them, they just don't have that same ecosystem of security. They're lower cost, and we won't be able to patch them. I mean, right now, the way to patch your home router is likely to throw it away and buy a new one. Recently, a major car manufacturer, I forget which one, had to recall several million cars to get a software update, because the only way they could update it was via a port inside the engine. They had to do it at the dealership. Right? Tesla, which had the same vulnerability, was able to download a patch over the internet. So these sorts of problems are going to show up again and again as these things turn into computers without the security ecosystem. And I do worry about them. The article where that quote you read came from was a vulnerability in a Samsung refrigerator that affected your Google login. Now, that's a really weird interaction. You wouldn't expect your refrigerator to affect your email security.
I don't even understand why it would.
Or how it could happen. But I assure you the engineers probably didn't either. It was an unexpected interaction between two different systems. So we have all of these things, they're lower cost, they're designed quicker, they're less reliable, not patchable, and they're going to have all of these weird interactions. And there are going to be vulnerabilities as a result of them.
And what are the risks of those vulnerabilities?
Now, the same thing that is risks for your computers, that you know, things can be hacked, that things can be taken over. You know, there are more risks when these things can actuate the world. And I don't like presenting scare scenarios. I think that's sort of bad. It's just bad to do. Right? I'm not going to give you the movie plot. But, you know, anything that you can do on a computer, you can now do on your car. So, you know, we now worry about a refrigerator sending spam, which is kind of weird. You know, we're gonna have to worry about hackers taking over these devices. Now, there's an article recently about baby monitors being hackable. Here's another thing on the internet. So now I worry about hackers eavesdropping on conversations or possibly seeing pictures and videos from hackable baby monitors. You know, we worry about hackable medical devices, and people have written about, you know, potential murder scenarios. You know, likely it'll be accidents, but you don't want the computers in your car to crash, because then your car might literally crash.
Why don't corporations develop snoop-proof operating systems then?
It's expensive. Who's going to pay for it? There's a lot of belief, because now you're having all of these non-security people designing these devices. They don't know it's insecure. They just don't have the expertise. And designing something securely costs money. If I have to produce a light bulb that's on the internet, I only have 30 cents for the chip, less. It's not like I'm building a multi-$100 smartphone or a $1,000 computer. The price points are much lower. So the margins are much lower. So there's less will to spend the money on security.
Doesn't that increase these corporations or these companies' liability?
You know, liability is still a little sloppy. We're not exactly sure how it works. Companies are largely taking the chance that they won't be found liable, or the person in charge will have a different job by the time the company is found liable. You know,
right.
There's a lot of playing fast and loose here because this is so new.
Well, I know you say you don't want to talk about, you know, you don't want to get into any kind of like sensationalistic scare tactics, but I do. And it's around the film Minority Report. You remember that movie, Tom Cruise?
I do.
And in Minority Report, it depicts a world where we're all tracked and marketed by our iris recognition, insect drones enter our homes and monitor us, and individuals are arrested based on the probability of them committing a crime in the future. Are we there?
No, we're not there. Certainly those technologies are here and the potential is there. You know, we are being judged by our data. So we learned recently that the TSA will put people on no-fly lists partly based on predictive data, on this Minority Report kind of, we think he might do something.
And we're listening to an interview with Bruce Schneier, author of Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World. I'm Rabia Yemen, host of The Digital Divide, and I am joined out in Membership Central with Rebecca and Mike. Hey, you guys.
Hey, Rabia.
Now, what do you think? I mean, he's just really saying it like it is. This guy is he's a security expert. He's testified before Congress. He actually helped read through a portion of the documents for The Guardian, that the documents that Ed Snowden made available. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an insider. He knows what's going on in data security.
Well, I think there's a lot to note here. We got to be informed. We're not going to be able to stop the flow of what's happening in the technological sphere and how it's driven by capitalism.
Right.
So we just need to be informed. 877-500-5266, by the way, is the number to call to support this type of information being on the radio, mm-hmm, at KBOO. But I do want to say that Becky and I were talking about, we don't want to get spam from our refrigerator, because you don't keep spam in a refrigerator.
Yeah, that's obvious. That doesn't need refrigeration. But I also...
It comes in a can, right?
Yeah, it comes in a can. It's coming in a can.
Hey, I just want to tell everybody. I want to add a little sugar before we get really heavy.
Okay, so
listeners, all right, we're in the membership drive, you know that. So the first thing I want you to do is I want you to know that if you call 877-500-5266, we have two copies of Bruce's new book, Data and Goliath. And you're one of the two lucky callers to call in and become a member, $5 a month, really. Mm-hmm. $5 a month, seriously. Two cups of fancy pants, really 1.5 cups of fancy pants coffee.
Yeah, I mean a frappuccino.
But I also want you to do this. I want you, if you're near an internet or your phone or a tablet or a pad or your refrigerator, just type in http://kabu, go to kabu.fm/thankyougifts. Because I want you to see our awesome hoodie. We have this hoodie that is so cool. It's going to be fall, like tomorrow, false. And you're going to want to put on something soft and warm and cozy, something that gives you a hug and hugs you back. So that's kabu.fm thank you gift. So you can get that KABU hoodie for $20 a month. And what else we got?
We have for $6.25 a month, and fitting into digital security, we have an audio flash drive that not only has just a ton of content, it also has a folder of open source and internet security software. And so should you want to control your online presence and footprint, you can use the Tor browser, you can use the TrueCrypt and KeePass. And the way to get that is calling 877-500-5266 right this very moment, and let our membership folks know that you want to support community radio.
Right. I mean, listener, you know, you listen because you value KABU's independent voice. Even when you disagree, you stand up for free speech with us. You value a healthy community. And let me tell you, a community without community radio, that's not a healthy community. That's a community that has a deficiency, like a lack of sunlight. And it's you that brings the sun. It keeps burning in Portland, Oregon, when you support your community radio station, because you already know that a community that has at least one independent media voice, free from corporate and government influence, is valuable. It's trustworthy. In fact, it's worthy.
Yeah, it's actually the most valuable and worthy thing out there if we're going to talk about information, because there's so much information that we get bombarded with that is is produced in from a very narrow point of view, a very narrow perspective. It's all about benefiting people at our expense, and the people that it benefits actually don't have our best interests in mind. But when you dial 877-500-5266, you're going to support people here at KABU, members, volunteers from the community, the few staff that we have, bringing you the information that's actually going to help you assess with the best kind of the best possible outlook, you know, armed with information, being informed, the society around you, the world that we actually live in. I want to thank a couple of people that donated online. We've got Kelly from Portland, Steve from Portland. Steve says he wants to keep the platter spinning with his donation. Most deaf, Steve, we're going to do that. And you can donate online too at kboo.fm.
That's right. And help support fierce independent reporting, fiercely independent cultural and music events. I mean, KABU helps create with the community the fabric of Portland and greater Cascadia, in fact. We are able to do any of this with the support of our community, and ask you to give us a call at 877-500-5266 and pledge $5 a month, y'all, five, for an amazing book. We've got the author on Digital Divide right now, but the book is called Data and Goliath. Give us a call, 877-500-5266.
And that's an example of that. You're put on this list in secret. You have no ability to defend yourself based on someone's assessment of what you might do in the future. We know that people are differentially marketed. The kind of offers you see from a bank, the kind of discounts you get, depend on your data. There are examples of people being denied loans because of their data. So we're not in a Minority Report world, but harbingers of that are here. Our data shadow is increasingly being used to define us and to discriminate. And I don't mean that in a racial term. I mean that in a make distinctions, to discriminate between a good customer and a bad customer, a high-value customer and a low-value customer. And we're not far off from a world where facial recognition works. I mean, you don't have to show ID. The computers know who you are. You walk into a store, the cameras recognize who you are, and you are given different types of treatment by the store clerks depending on your perceived value to them.
So that's how the discrimination can manifest itself.
It can, and it can manifest itself in worse ways as well. You can be denied a home loan. You could be denied a mortgage because of data. Now, that's done with a racial bias, that's illegal. But other biases are not illegal.
it's hard for me, kind of, you know, having, you know, a small window into the corporate work world and knowing how much of it is frequently, you know, like a facade, like there's a glossy package on the outside. But inside the organization, you know, they're generally usually not as technologically advanced as they'd like you to believe. It's hard to believe that that level of competence exists where they could, you know, collect that kind of information and then actually use it.
But that's how Facebook works. That's how Google makes its money. I mean, you know, when you go online, you see ads that are targeted to you.
And so, right, if I'm searching for something, I will see ads that totally relate to what I was searching for in the last week.
Around the internet.
Yeah.
But, and there are also going to be ads that relate to your age and to your gender. There have been research on marketing. Here's an example, cosmetics to women, where basically the research shows that low self-esteem correlates to purchases. So are there ways to figure out the mood of the person seeing the ad and only show them the ad when they are in a mood conducive to buying the product? Right? You could do that. And then it's one further step towards, can you possibly even manipulate the mood? So, I mean, a lot of these systems are very error-prone. I mean, you know this. You know when an ad starts following you around, that's not one you care about. And sometimes you laugh.
Right.
They got it so wrong. But in advertising, you can tolerate a very high error rate because it's better than throwing up a billboard, which has an enormously high error rate. Other applications, a mortgage loan, you want a lower error rate, but still you can tolerate some errors. Right? The TSA is using this for predictive screening. I don't know what kind of error rate they believe is acceptable, but, you know, they found one. Now, we in the U.S. target drone strikes based on data. Hopefully, we want a very, very low error rate for that.
Hopefully. Well, in your book, you write that we're now living in the golden age of surveillance. So if this is the golden age, what does the future look like?
By the golden age, I mean that it's ubiquitous. And this is, again, this notion that computers are everywhere. Computers produce data as a byproduct of what they do, and a lot of that data is surveillance data. And so I'm talking to you on a cell phone. That cell phone knows where I am. It tracks my location constantly because it can't work otherwise. It won't ring when you call unless it knows where I am in the country.
Right.
That's a surveillance device that we all carry in our pockets. We coordinated this interview via email. That email is surveillance data. It's our conversation, when we talked, what we said. That's all there. You make a purchase with a credit card. The computers record that. What I mean by golden age of surveillance is that everything we do is collected because we're using computers and collecting the data is cheap. So we are all carrying these tools of surveillance around with us willingly, happily. We love having cell phones.
I love having cell phones.
Google.
That's right.
But Google, as wonderful it is for figuring out what we want to read about, compiles a very intimate portrait of what we think. Now, I used to say that Google knows more about me than about my wife does. Now, that's true, but it doesn't go far enough. Google knows more about me than I do. Google knows everything I'm thinking about, when I'm thinking about it, my hopes, my fears.
That sounds crazy, even to me. Now, how is that possible?
Because every time you think something, you Google it. I certainly do.
Okay.
Right. Every time there's something I'm interested in, Google knows. Because one of the first things I do is Google it. And Google keeps those records forever. It's a very intimate portrait of our innermost thoughts.
Google is using it for profit. Is the government accessing Google's information?
So, now this is an interesting question. The meta answer is yes, under a variety of guises. So we know that the government will go to Google with court orders and demand data, whether it's your Gmail account, your search history, what things Google might know about you, about individual people. We know that the NSA had in the past, we learned this in the Snowden documents, was able to breach the links between Google data centers outside the U.S. so it didn't fall under the same U.S. law, and was collecting that kind of data in bulk about everybody, U.S. citizens and non-U.S. citizens alike. So there are a variety of ways the government gets at this data. We know the FBI has been getting at Facebook's database of tagged photographs. So we don't see a lot of the details. We do know the government is using this data in a variety of guises and in a variety of different legal authorities.
How does our government's internet privacy regulations compare with other countries?
Our government doesn't really have any internet privacy regulations, so it's kind of hard to compare them because other countries, they exist, and in our country, they're largely absent. There's no comprehensive privacy law. There are some privacy rules in certain areas, medical data, little bit, you know, a lot less than you think, some financial data. But largely, the data we generate is owned by the company that collects it.
I wanted to ask you, in your book, you say that we don't actually own our data, but the collector of our data owns it. That sounds crazy.
Well, you know, it's what it is. AT&T, which is my cell phone provider, owns that list, that database of who I've called and who calls me. And if they want to sell that to a marketer, they can do that. Google, Facebook, those companies own the data. You read your service agreements. Right? Google reads your email and sends you ads based on it. Right? That it's their data, do what they will. And it does seem crazy, but that is the legal regime really developed in the 70s and 80s when there was a lot less data. The idea was you shared it with this company, so you know they have just as much ownership as you do. But that's real different than a world where everything is a computer.
Well, then, is there any way that we can use technology but protect our privacy? And we'll hear the answer to that question when we get back to our interview with Bruce Schneier. I'm Rabia Yemin, host of The Digital Divide. And I just want to remind you, listeners, that you can call 877-500-5266. You can grab one of two copies that we have of Bruce's most recent book, Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World. And if you followed my directives and went to kabu.fm/thankyougifts and you saw our awesome KABU hoodie for $20 a month, quarter of a cable TV bill, instead of bringing you tired, repetitive pap, it's fresh. It smells like a field of fresh flowers. It's crisp like the first chill of fall. It's your community radio station, KBOO. And I am joined with Rebecca and Mike.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, everybody. 877-500-5266. Let me slow down. 877-500-5266.
One ringy dingy
is going to get you on the phone with one of our volunteers who's going to talk to you about how to become a member of KABU. We know you value the information that you're getting right now on The Digital Divide with our guest.
Yeah. Our guest, Bruce Schneier.
Yeah, that's right. Bruce Schneier.
Thank you. I wanted to say real quick that one of the points that he brought up that Rabia was mentioning, the data generated through us that is being collected by the company is owned by the company. And this is totally different from what KABU provides. The kind of things that we do here are more so we create data as volunteers, as people passionate about it, and it's not owned by a company at all. And that's what your support helps to provide us with, the freedom to do this. And you can call 877-500-5266 if you support that, if you support that fierce independence, if you support independent thought and free thinking.
Well, you know, we know our listeners do, just by the virtue of the fact that they are listening. You listen because you value KABU's independent voice, even when you disagree. But you still stand up with us. I mean, you're tuned in now. Mm-hmm. And that's how we know you find KABU worthy. Worthy of your attention, your opinion, and your loyalty. Because when you participate by donating, by calling 877-500-5266. You are participating. You're voting with your wallet. And in this culture, talk is cheap, but it's not that cheap. So be part of the process and donate now, 877-500-5266.
Yeah, talk about ownership. When you become a member of this station, then you're taking some ownership over KABU as a community resource. You actually are playing a part. You're playing a role. You're becoming part of the station. You have influence on what happens at the station, and you can get some of the gifts that the station is here to share with you as a community resource.
Gifts and goodies.
Technical skills, training. Hoodies, mm-hmm. Not just what you get from the drive, not just the material things that you might walk away with, like the $20 a month donation that will get you that beautiful hoodie. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm rocking mine today. I came to work in it, mm-hmm. and I'm looking forward to the cooler weather and having that hoodie. And I'm also happy that it has a radio tower with the star and KABU on it, because I let people know I represent KABU. I'm a member of KABU. I'm part of KABU. When I'm in a community, you can be too. And I want to thank Sarah, new from Northwest, who just became a member. And she called 877-500-5266.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that we provide, because I've been saying that all day, but people can come in, learn how to make radio, learn these technical skills all for free. You come in because you're interested. You have a passion. And that's the case across the board for everything that we do at KABU. That is because people love it. People love being in the community. People love the fact that everybody has a say, and we all work together to create a new and intelligent, incredible environment.
It's like making a new world, really. Mm-hmm. And you know, on this show, we have brought our listeners so many important voices. We've brought you Cory Doctorow, Howard Bloom, Robert Mirapol, George Dyson, my personal hero, Howard Rheingold, so many more. Last month, we featured a conversation with science fiction author, musician, and Portland punk pioneer, John Shirley. Now, I know some of you out there are like, what? John Shirley? Really? and the answer is yes, and you can go back and listen to that on our KABU Digital Archives. We've had Truth Dig Editor-in-Chief, journalist Robert Shear, on this program. So we work hard to bring you the real voices. We've kept you informed of what's going on with Edward Snowden, mm-hmm. Chelsea Manning. This is important, and these are topics and people that do not get represented, that do not get a voice in the mainstream media. I mean, I know if you watch any mainstream media at all and listen to KABU, it must be a stark comparison, right? 877-500-5266 between because you know what it is about mainstream media listeners? It's not what they tell you, seriously. It mm-hmm. has nothing to do with what they tell you. It has everything to do with what they don't tell you. 877-500-5266.
Well, I'm thinking about, we've got about how many volunteers? I think 500 volunteers.
About 500 active volunteers.
Yeah, we've got about 5,000 members. I'm thinking about the diversity of the people that are volunteers. When I'm in this building, day to day, week to week, I'm thinking about all the different types of people, the different types of voices, the different personalities that are part of KABU, and how if I was to listen to commercial radio or turn on a commercial news outlet, I would only see over the years, over the decades, three different styles of people. There's either the blonde person that talks how they talk, or there's sometimes people with brown skin, and you know, they have on suits, or there's the white guy that talks
at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, and it's always the same thing over and over again, but there's never actually any personality. There's never any diversity, and you never really get a feel for who people are as human beings. And that's what we do here at KABU. You know, it's not just about the information, but it's about the people that are actually bringing you the information. And 877-500-5266 will put you on the phone with some of those people who will allow you to become a member, become part of what happens down here.
That's right. Ring our bell now, 877-500-5266. We've shared how you can better secure yourself. Rebecca, tell them about that thumb drive again before we go back to our interview.
That's $6.25 a month, y'all, and it includes a folder of open source internet security tools that will help protects you from this mass invasion of your online privacy. Tor browser, it has the KeyPass and TrueCrypt. You can encrypt your presence and your footprint can be reduced in a way that will encourage people just to leave you alone. Leave you alone. But don't leave us alone. Give us a call. 877-500-5266.
There you go.
Yeah,
all right. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I just was going to say, we don't want to have our refrigerator reprogramming the flavor of our food.
No.
That's all.
Yeah. The thermostat can just like not decide how warm it needs to be.
Right. Well, you know, who knows? Whoever thought the world would be the way that it is today, and who knows where we're going. But let's get back to our interview. We'll talk to you in a little while. While you're listening, pick up that phone and tap 877-500-5266. Grab yourself a drive, a hoodie, a book. Mm-hmm. Just say thank you. Talk to a nice person on the phone. Back to the interview.
And right now, no. Because this stuff is happening in the background. You know, the advice you can give is don't have a cell phone, don't have an email address, don't use a credit card. It's kind of dumb advice. I mean, those tools are necessary to be a fully participating citizen in our 21st century society. Now, we really do need comprehensive laws and regulations because you can design systems to preserve privacy, but people aren't, companies aren't. And I don't think they will until there is regulation forcing them to.
Kind of going back to something you mentioned earlier about the TSA, does the TSA actually protect us from anything?
You know, it's a complicated question. The short answer is not really. Screening for guns and bombs is a good thing. A lot of stuff the TSA does, which is just security theater. You know, that's an entire half-hour show in itself. Maybe we should come back and do that another time.
That's what it feels like. It feels like, you know, when you go through the airport and you see all the TSA, that it really is there just as theater to make you believe that someone is doing something to make you safer. But I don't ever feel safer.
Yeah, but I think you're in the minority. I think a lot of people do. And we know this from tests, right? We've seen tests where the TSA misses a surprisingly large number of guns and bombs that go through airport security in tests. I mean, a number that should make you say, why am I spending this money?
Right.
And that's just sort of one of the things the TSA is doing wrong.
In your book, you thank Edward Snowden in your acknowledgments. In fact, you call him courageous, and I agree with you. Talk to us a little bit about Edward Snowden and his influence on this book and on you, and the influence you think the impact you think his actions may have had.
On the one hand, nothing Edward Snowden told us about the NSA was a big surprise. I mean, I'll tell people the most surprising thing about the Snowden documents is the lack of surprise in the Snowden documents. You know, any book or movie with an NSA villain, this is exactly what they're doing. There's no magic. There's no secret. It's just what we should expect. But seeing it in the real, seeing the documents, seeing the details, seeing the code names really changed public perception because people finally couldn't ignore it, couldn't say, oh, that's just paranoia, couldn't pretend it wasn't happening. What Snowden did was make it real. And by making it real, he changed the debate. I mean, it's extraordinary. Since Snowden, all three branches of the U.S. government, the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative, have changed what they're doing, have changed policy because of those documents, because of his revelations. And that's truly extraordinary. And that would not have happened without the details. What Snowden did is provide the details that made the speculations real.
Do you think I guess I'm cynical in believing that these government agencies would actually follow their own policies.
I'm cynical too, but it turns out that agencies tend to follow the policies that, you know, agencies don't really go rogue. That even if you look what the NSA has been doing, it was, you know, tortured interpretations of secret laws. They did believe what they were doing was legal and authorized. And if they went too far, it's because others above them didn't rein them in. And reforms have been minimal, and there's a long way to go. But the fact that we have reforms at all, I think, is amazing.
Did you see the John Oliver Edward Snowden interview?
I did. It was kind of amazing.
I think it was amazing. I think Ed looked utterly dejected when John showed him the man on the street interviews where people had no clear idea who he was. But then when they took Ed out of the question and asked if they, the people, objected to the government being able to snoop on, and I'm going to say naked pictures, which is not the word that John used, when they asked if the government should be able to snoop on naked pictures from their phones or anybody's phones, everyone they asked unanimously said the government should not be allowed to do that. And, of course, that's kind of a depressing, you know, commentary on American awareness and American values. It's American freedom is measured on the ability of government to, you know, like snoop on your naked phone pictures.
But this is America. I mean, not everyone's a policy wonk. For someone like me, I was following every one of those stories, every one of those documents very closely. And you know, that was a big deal for me. For most people, it wasn't. For most people, they got tired of the story after the second revelation, and they moved on. So it's not surprising that a lot of people, you know, don't know the person or confuse him with Julian Assange, which is what happened in those little interviews.
Right.
Because they're not paying that close attention. But yes, when you ask people about government surveillance, about privacy, they are pretty strong in favor of privacy.
You talk about breaking up the NSA. Tell us about that.
So the NSA really has two halves. They have two complementary but antagonistic missions. One is to protect U.S. communications and computer systems from attack, and the other is to attack the communication and computer systems of the enemy. Now, those missions were put into the NSA back in the 50s when the NSA was founded, and they were put there because it made sense at the time, because attacking Soviet radios and defending U.S. radios didn't conflict because they were different radios and there's different things. What's happened with the internet is that everyone's using the same things. We're all using Microsoft Windows and Cisco routers and Chrome browsers. So every time you attack their thing, you leave our thing vulnerable. Every time you defend our thing, you also defend their thing. And those missions are now so antagonistic, they make no sense in the same organization, that we need to break apart the missions of attack and defense so that defense can truly flourish. Because right now, defense takes a backseat towards attack, and that leaves us all at risk. It's a more complicated argument, but that's the basic frame of it.
What is the risk that it leaves us vulnerable to?
Attack.
What kind of attack?
Any kind of attack you might think of, from criminals or foreign governments. So here's an example. The NSA finds a vulnerability in Microsoft Windows that allows them to break into computers. They have two choices. Either they keep it secret and use it to break into Chinese computers. I'm making this up. But it's as if by keeping it secret, our computers are vulnerable to the same attack. Or on the other hand, they can tell Microsoft, get the vulnerability fixed, thereby protecting our computers, protecting our infrastructure, protecting our security, but at the same time denying themselves the ability to attack the Chinese computers. It's an either-or choice, attack or defense. Which one do you prefer?
Well, you know,
and right now, it seems like attack has the upper hand. Attack gets the benefits. And that leaves us very vulnerable.
Well, that is a question actually someone asked me to ask you. We hear a lot about other countries, you know, attacking our computers, but we don't hear about the United States attacking other people's computers. But of course, I mean, part of the Snowden documents conclusively demonstrated, yeah, we do that.
We do that a lot.
We do that a lot.
We're actually probably one of the biggest attackers. I think that doesn't serve us well in this ideological battle with China on hacking. You know, we don't have a lot of moral authority to say, don't do this, it's bad, because we do the same thing.
Well, right. So let's talk about North Korea. Let's talk about the Sony. Now, you initially, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you initially didn't really believe that North Korea hacked into Sony and did that. But then you changed your mind.
I did. I was very skeptical in the beginning because it's such a bizarre thing, North Korea attacking a movie company. I mean, who would have thought that the first cyber attack against the United States would be a movie company? It wasn't even on our top 10 list of targets.
Right.
Not even on our top 100 list of targets.
Right.
But yes, I eventually came around, and what convinced me, and I sort of urge any listener who is still skeptical, there was a article in the New York Times mid-January, I think January 17th, by David Sanger, a very good national security reporter there, which talked about what was going on inside the White House, how the White House figured out it was North Korea, and the internal machinations about that. That article had enough detail, and I trust David Sanger enough that I do believe that the U.S. was convinced that it was North Korea. And we don't know what the evidence was. We know there's a lot of secret evidence that was involved from the NSA.
And so you believe it. And the motivation, was it just to be like, we'll show you, we can do this?
You know, it's hard to tell, right? I mean, North Korea's got kind of a wacky leader and making some kind of odd choices, but it does seem to be intimidation and coercion, you know, about the movie. As bizarre as that seems, it looks like that's what happened.
It's almost something that you would find in the satirical movie.
It actually is, and I'm sure when the textbooks are written on the early decades of cyber conflict, this will be a couple of very amusing paragraphs.
I was expecting, you know, that we were going to hear North Korea, you know, they hacked Ashley Madison and they released all that.
Yeah, but we are seeing more and more of this nation state attacking non-government targets. So this past year, China attacked GitHub. GitHub is a repository for open source code. The Iranian government attacked the Saudi oil company. You know, we are seeing more of these examples of governments attacking non-government targets. And I expect we're going to see more of it in the years ahead because it's a very effective avenue of attack, and these non-government targets tend to be less well defended.
Right. So maybe those are the wars of the future, where we're not even actually using weapons, but simply, you know, creating chaos, you know, the countries creating chaos on other countries by...
Yeah, my guess is we'll need another word than war for that. I mean, I really dislike the term cyber war. I think we're really misusing the word war. I mean, those will probably be what conflicts will look like more, but I don't know if we can call them wars. I think wars require armies and shooting and all those things that wars tend to have.
Right, and of course, there's drones.
Indeed, which is a whole other area of unmanned, semi-autonomous conflict, which is going to get really interesting in the next decade.
And AI, which is a really hot topic right now when we're talking about...
It really is. I mean, you know, if you think about it, the United States, you know, kills people with flying robots, which on the one hand is terrifying, on the other hand is kind of awesome. We kill people with flying robots. Who would have thought?
Right. Terrifying. When flying robots could be used for purposes of good, like, you know, delivering my order.
Yeah, you know. No, I think it's forces of average. I mean, forces of good would be like delivering medicines to dying people. But yes, I mean, certainly but like all technologies, there are good uses, there are bad uses. You know, the technology tends not to have a moral compass. It's the users of technology. Now, some technologies can lean one way or the other, but it really is about how we decide to use these technologies.
Well, we have a lot of people, even at this radio station, where this tends to be a radio station. Well, our our programming charter is to serve the underserved and to represent underrepresented points of view, you know, to counter mainstream media's lack of news. I know a lot of people here at the station who are like, oh, you should use this browser because your searching or your browsing is hidden or protected. Is that real?
So a lot of it is. I mean, it's around the edges. But there are lots of privacy enhancing tools out there. I recommend searching of them and looking at them and figuring out and using some of them if you want to. But in the end, your email is at Google. Your cell phone's in your pocket. You're using Facebook. You're using a browser that keeps your some things hidden is really in the noise.
Well, being connected, like I think that, you know, being connected, having my medical information, available to, you know, any doctor, you know, if I should have to, you know, get an accident and I get taken to a hospital and they've never seen me before, I want them to have my information. I don't want them to be like, we don't know anything about this person.
Of course you do.
Right.
Of course you want it. And honestly, you like it. We all like it when Google shows us real-time traffic information, which is based on surveillance, right? That's a great feature, but that's based on keeping cars under surveillance, knowing their speeds, and calculating where the traffic jams are. The benefits of surveillance are enormous. Nobody's going to throw away their cell phone after this interview. But the question really is, who has access to the data, under what laws, how long is the data stored, all of those things which really we don't have policies about. And that's what we need to start thinking about.
I'm Rabia Yeaman, and we are talking today with Bruce Schneier. His newest book, Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World. And we're talking about internet security or lack thereof. Bruce, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. This was fun. I support community radio. I support independent radio, and I think you should too.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
And that was, of course, our interview with Bruce Schneier, author of Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World. You can have a copy of that book by calling 877, not a copy of that book, you can have the actual book, 877-500-5266. And you know what I love about Cable, you guys, Rebecca and Mike out there in Membership Central, I love that, you know, together, us, you, me,
right,
the listeners, together we are walking uncharted territories in technological advances, like artificial intelligence, all brought together on this program, The Digital Divide, your community radio station. And here I was thinking about, you know, today coming on the air, asking listeners, you know, to help support the radio station. We're all in it together, right, as a community. And the things about KBOO that I value, and I suspect you, dear listener, also value, are KBOO's fierce independence. And I really use that word. We are fiercely independent. We are unfettered by corporate influence. We encourage independent voices and points of view. We encourage that.
I think about things that have happened in the last few years that have actually been successful wins for social movements. I'm thinking about paid sick leave. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the fight for 15. I'm thinking about Black Lives Matter and how some of these police officers that are murdering people actually are getting indicted and are being prosecuted.
That's changed. And that represents change.
And it's important that we note that, because as messed up as things are, there are people who are active, there are people who are committed, and there are results. And KBOO is part of that process. 877-500-5266 is the number to call for you to become part of the process. And thinking about the digital divide, we have an unprecedented time in history where technology is going to replace. It is already replacing labor. It's replacing people in a lot of regards. And there's the potential for liberation, or there's the potential for further repression. And it's kind of an epic battle between good and evil. So join us, and let's make sure that we're going to use this technology to actually make life better as opposed to being destructive. 877-500-5266.
Yeah, I mean, there should be a conversation about how technology can be used either to better or to control our lives. And those decisions are being made by corporations and by governments and things like that. Together, we can have a conversation, us, people, not like pseudo people like the corporations. And having that conversation and having a place to actually air it is so important. And that's why we ask you to support us at 877-500-5266. Additionally, I'd like to talk about Clarence from Portland, who just moved to the area and wanted to thank us for offering, he says, a community-minded oasis, and that we have all these amazing voices like the Digital Divide, like David Barsamian's alternative radio. And so we forge new frontiers. We do so together as a community, and we're asking for your support.
That's right. Take a nice, long, refreshing sip of 877-500-5266. And you know, when you listen, sometimes what you hear, I'm going to guess, makes you feel outraged. And sometimes it might make you feel helpless or relieved or happy or afraid or vindicated. And sometimes even it might make you feel like dancing. Especially Saturday afternoons, right?
Oh, yeah.
But most of the time, most of all, you felt something, and we felt something. We felt it together. You felt something, 877-500-5266, but not like programming designed to numb and sedate you. And you can get that every night of the week. You just flip that dial. But on KBOO, we want to inform you. We want to invigorate. We want to titillate you. We don't want you to be sedated. Isn't the opposite? What's the opposite of that?
Invigoration.
Activated.
Yeah. Activated.
Engaged.
Radioactivated. Sorry.
Become radioactive.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
877-500-5266. We've got 5 minutes. I'm telling you what, we have $500 goal for this program. And we are somewhere around halfway there. We need, what, 2 or 3 callers? Grab yourself a hoodie, $20 a month. $5 a month will get you that book or the flash drive. But give us a call now. We've got 4 minutes now, 877-500-5266. Last 4 minutes to make the phone ring during this program and to help the Digital Divide reach its monetary goal of contributing to the overall radio budget. We know you're there. We know you're going to step up to that phone and tap 877-500-5266 because you value independent, corporate-free, government-free radio, free speech radio.
A lot of people feel overwhelmed when they try to think about what they can do to make the world a better place. And it shuts a lot of people down. They go, well, I can't do anything about that. I don't have the power. Therefore, I'm just going to watch TV and tune out and try to sedate myself. But imagine if you got struck by lightning and all of a sudden had superpowers. Imagine if you did get bit by a radioactive arachnid and all of a sudden
or you could a giant biting fern.
Right, a giant biting fern while you were walking in the forest, right? And all of a sudden, your drop in the bucket turned into a tidal wave, you know, and you had all this power. And that's what happens when you join the community of KBOO. Your voice becomes something, it becomes part of a collective. It exponentially increases the effect that you're able to have because you're part of something where so many other like-minded people are putting their thoughts, their time, and their energy into making a difference. And the number to call on your telephone where you can become part of that process is 877-500-5266.
You have the power, dear listener and dear member, to call, but also to be participant in something that is larger than any one of us, that is a voice of a community that is, it's just incredible to be able to participate in that, to create a public space.
It's empowering.
We have
personally empowering and collectively empowering.
Yeah, indeed. We all have agency, and not simply to perform this particular action we're asking you to do, but to lend your voice, to lend your opinion, to have a dialogue with yourself, with your friends, with people all around you, and using KBOO as sort of like the nexus of that information, to be able to take a look, to listen to what's happening, and to make your own informed decisions rather than the homogenous media telling you not to do so, to not think for yourself. And we encourage you to empower us to empower you at 877-500-5266.
I'm so glad you use that kind of metaphor analogy just now of empowering us to re-empower our listeners. And I don't know about you, but the relationships that I find most satisfying, most worth my time, are relationships that are symbiotic, relationships that are reciprocal. And that's what we have, listeners. Symbiosis is close and often long-term interaction, you know, between two different biological species. And I mean, you, the listener, and us radio people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're talking to you about flourishing, about thriving, right?
Yeah.
About evolving together. Mm-hmm. Because it's a together process. And we all talk about it. We hear the news and we make a frowny face, you know, when we hear the horrible things that are happening. But this is an actual live, living opportunity to get out your wallet, to dial 877-500-5266, to make the smallest. It's really a token. But as our good friend Justin says, many hands make, you know, light lifting. Mm-hmm. 877-500-5266, $5 a month. Gets the job done when everybody participates.
It's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. My bad.
It's all good. Thank you to all the people who come down, who've walked into the station here at 20 Southeast 8th. Thank you to all the people who've called 877-500-5266 on your telephone. And thank you to all the people who've gone online to KBOO.fm/give and become part of the synergistic symbiosis, this reciprocity that we're talking about, this circle, this give and take where we all participate in creating what it is that we want to see, as opposed to complaining about what it is that we don't like.
But participate.
You can. And you know, I want to invite people who have become members and people who need to become members and want to become members to not only donate, but to come down here to 20 Southeast 8th, become a volunteer, take volunteer orientation. Ultimately, maybe you will have a radio show. Maybe you can become a programmer.